Ag Reporter, have we got a treat for you. Leo Holman. I followed this man's work. He's a tremendous author, researcher. He's got a book coming out on the 24th. I just can't wait to get it in my hands. Stealth Invasion, The Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. All right. I followed his work, on WorldNet Daily. This man knows what he's talking about. His research is impeccable. Everything he has written about. And I not only agree with, I applaud, as a matter of fact. You know, Americans are shocked by these ongoing news reports chronicling growing chaos in Europe. Are we shocked anymore? I don't think so, but you see this massive Muslim immigration. It's wreaking havoc on the continent, including horrendous acts of mass terrorism, and you've got, look at Berlin and Nice and all that. You've got this epidemic of rape and sexual assault against European women. Folks, that's coming here to the United States if left unchecked.
Even today, there's a mass stabbing in Paris.
I saw that. But there's this transformation taking place, not only in gateway cities like New York and Chicago, in other places, Los Angeles, but in all American cities, such as Twin Falls, Idaho, St. Cloud, Minnesota, and so on. So, as stealth invasion, as his book reveals, the Muslim Brotherhood has a very well-defined strategy for conquering America. And he's going to talk about it with us tonight. And I'm just so proud to have to really have Leo Holman on, and I'm going to thank John Robertson for arranging this interview. I'm just so tickled to have him with us. Before we get to our guest tonight, I'm speaking to anyone who runs a small or medium business or manages one. I'm speaking to you. Are you responsible for human resources, for personnel, records, and paperwork for your company? And are you overwhelmed? If you know, for example, the daily grind of trying to resolve payroll issues. Oh, pick me. Yeah. Answering questions, putting out fires, chasing down data, filing, organizing. If you're involved in all that, I've got something for you. Remember this. BambooHR.com. You won't forget it. BambooHR.com. Everything about BambooHR.com is designed to make life easier for business owners, for those who manage human resources, and even the employees. This is the best website for human resource management, for personnel management, the complete online HR management software for small to medium-sized businesses. That is what BambooHR.com is. One simple central system for keeping organized and detailed records for every employee. No more file cabinets, no more missed deadlines, no more spreadsheets, no more messy whiteboards. Forget about that. Did you forget to log in employees' time off, or did you forget if they were out last Monday? Well, how about that confidential salary history filed in paper in employee files? Do you know how many times I was called as an investigator because of a breach of security in personnel? Well, no more, folks. Enjoy everything in one place. Job and salary history, vacation and sick days, benefits, training history, and so much more. We have a limited time offer just for listeners of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Here's what you do. You visit BambooHR.com. Yeah, click on the mic and enter our code HH to get a free 14-day trial. Once you try this, you will be hooked. You will be sold. Try it, and you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. HR paperwork solutions made easy. That is BambooHR.com. BambooHR.com. Enter our promo code HH. One more time, BambooHR.com. Enter our promo code HH. You're just going to love it, Joe.
All right, with us now is WorldNet Daily news editor and author Leo Holman, and he is joining us now. We tried to get him on video Skype. We've been having some issues with the video for whatever reason, and I think he is on the landline with us now. Can you hear us, Leo?
I am. Happy to be
Excellent.
Here today.
Well, I'll tell you, you are the man. As far as I'm concerned, you're the man. I love your work. We love your work here at the Hagman Studio, and we talk about it all the time. You've done some fantastic articles at WorldNet Daily, and we want to thank you for all of your hard work and research, and also just remind everyone your book, Stealth Jihad, what did I just do with that?
Stealth Invasion.
Thank you. That's the one. Thanks for
it's new. It's very new. So I'll let you off the hook there, Mr. Hagman.
Well, call me Doug, and I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to on the 24th. I'm going to make sure I've got a copy in my hands or on its way to my hands, a hard copy. I love the hard copy books, so
yeah.
Thank you for doing that. So, anyway.
Let's start with your new book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. We have seen the effects of this resettlement and invasion of Europe. We've seen what the Obama administration has done here, bringing in Syrian refugees, the majority of them, 98% or more Muslim. And the violence is still yet to be seen over here as much as it is in Europe. But what does it say about Europe now that the immigration and resettlement of Muslim refugees is transforming this nation and this group of nations into a totally different landscape than what it was before in a terrible way? And how are the people putting up with this and the politicians continuing to be able to sell it?
Well, you know, it's happening in Germany. It's happening in France. We've seen what has happened in the UK with the Brexit vote. I think Germany and France may have one last chance to sort of turn it around. They've got elections coming up in those countries in 2017. And if the current trends continue, I expect the opposition parties, the so-called populist parties, to really surprise some people, similar to the way Donald Trump surprised us here in the U.S. And, you know, we've seen some surveys come out just in the last couple of weeks. Up to one half of Germans now say that they feel like outsiders, like foreigners in their own country. 58% of German women now say that they are afraid to go outside at certain times of the day, especially after dark, in public spaces. We've seen what happened on New Year's Eve a year ago with over 1,200 sexual assaults on German women committed by Muslim migrants, and then the German authorities and the media initially tried to, their first reaction was to try to cover it up. And it eventually came out, just like it did in the UK, where over a decade of sexual abuse of young schoolgirls there, this is in my book as well, were groomed by Muslim sex gangs, mostly from Pakistan. The media to this day won't call them Muslims, they call them Asians. But they can't deny that it happened. And the most troubling thing that I'm seeing is that I'm starting to see the exact same seeds of these type of behaviors showing up here in the U.S. I document a few of them in my book, and I just pray to God that these are not just the first fruits of a full-blown, you know, jihad in this country. But we are seeing some of the bad signs of media complicit with law enforcement, covering up refugee crimes. We just had a case I reported on about a week ago in Aberdeen, South Dakota, where a Muslim migrant refugee from Somalia had just been in the country for a week, and he just showed up in Aberdeen for a day. The very first day he arrives in Aberdeen to work at the local meat plant, beef packing plant, he wanders, he's staying at the White House Hotel, that's no joke, and he wanders about 2 miles down the street from his hotel and finds himself at a mental health facility for special needs adults, and the workers there had just put a 31-year-old woman with severe mental disabilities out in the sun where she likes to sit during the day, and had gone back into the facility to grab a few more patients. And this refugee proceeds to try to rape her. And this happened last July 30th, 31st, right around there. The local media never reported it. He went to trial on December 24th. Just before, or December 20th, just a few days before Christmas this year. He was convicted of attempted sexual assault on a woman who is unable to give consent. He was literally ready to rape her when he was caught red-handed by the facility care worker. Do you know that the local media, Doug, never reported the trial either?
Nice.
And then when I did the story and called the local editor and asked why didn't you do it, he said, "Oh, we just must have missed that one. Thanks for pointing that out. It surely was just I haven't talked to my court's reporter, but it must have been an oversight." Well, he puts out an article the very next day after I put mine out, but lacking some very important information. He reported that it happened, that the man was convicted, Mohammed, whatever his name was. But he conveniently leaves out, A, that he was a refugee, B, that he was Muslim, C, that he had only arrived there that day in his city before he preyed upon this helpless woman. And the same thing had happened around that same time of year, July last year, in Twin Falls, Idaho, when three refugee boys raped a five-year-old special needs girl in the apartment complex in low-income apartments right there in Twin Falls. And it would have been even worse if an elderly resident hadn't walked in and caught them in the act. The oldest one, 14 years old, was filming the entire thing. We reported it. InfoWars reported it. You may recall this story. It had a lot of media attention in the conservative press. Well, what happened? The establishment media there in Twin Falls and some other cities around there, they all came out with articles saying that we basically concocted this story and it must have been fake news.
I saw that. Yeah.
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 Unbelievable. Yeah. And the InfoWars story did have a couple of minor facts wrong. They said the refugees were from Syria. In fact, they were from Sudan and Iraq. My story was 100% airtight. Not a single thing was wrong with it. They lumped me in with everyone else. Even the InfoWars story, though, was 85% accurate. And they just accused us all of basically making it up. And the Obama-appointed U.S. attorney there in Idaho, Miss Wendy Olson, came out astonishingly and injected herself into this local criminal case, this federal prosecutor, and issued this terse warning. I couldn't believe it. I almost choked on my coffee the morning when I read this statement from her, saying that if any other local people or media came out with, quote, false, misleading, or inflammatory information about the case or about the perpetrators, she would not hesitate to prosecute them. Now, she ended up having to walk those comments back because she came under some pretty heavy condemnation, not only from conservatives, but from one liberal law professor. And the same type of thing, you may recall, happened after San Bernardino, when Loretta Lynch came out with a statement and said that if there were any Americans who came out and had speech critical of Islam that, as she saw it, edged towards violence, she would, quote, aggressively come after them with prosecution. She also had to walk those comments back. But it's a testing, I see it as a testing ground, Doug, to see if they can treat these crimes the same here as they have been treated in Europe. And so this book, that Stealth Invasion, it lays out sort of the landscape of where we are in Europe, where we are in the United States, and Donald Trump said in one of his speeches before he was elected that he wanted to halt all Muslim immigration until we could figure out what the hell is going on.
Right.
Well, this book, I did my best in this book to explain to Mr. Trump what is going on and others. I think he was honestly interested in it, and I hope he continues to be interested in it, but that remains to be seen, and we will, I guess, find out shortly.
If we can, going back to Germany, and this ties into the title of your book, the Stealth Invasion, I've read a lot of articles that talk about under the cover of night, on top of the refugees that were openly being admitted to Germany, there was airports that were in operation flying, two, three, four planes full of immigrants in at night that were not being used or tallied as the rest of the immigrants were. and that this was an operation that's been ongoing much longer than what is being given to the public, the information that's been given to the public. Have we seen any additional stories like that in the U.S. or in other parts of Europe?
That's an interesting question. I have heard of some reports to that effect. I've never been able to nail them down. About the closest I have been able to nail down, however, is a situation in Michigan, where there is a hotel in I believe Sterling Heights, Michigan, which, if you go on the Secretary of State website and research Syrian refugees for Michigan in that database, it shows none having been sent to Sterling Heights, Michigan. But I have a source there who personally walked into this hotel and saw women, Syrian-looking women in full garb, their faces covered in burqas, and two men standing guard outside. And so he went in and started asking questions, and he talked to the clerk and he talked to the maintenance man, and they both confirmed to him that yes, these are Syrian refugees, and they filled one whole wing of the hotel. And there was about 23 families, which if you consider four or five children per family, that's quite a number of Syrian refugees. A
couple hundred.
Yeah. And so this is going on. What I assume is happening is they're being temporarily placed in these hotels until they can have housing, permanent housing found for them in any number of our cities. Michigan and Minnesota are two states that, in my opinion, have been hit the hardest. Texas has been hit hard as well. The only difference between Minnesota and Michigan seems to be that Minnesota has pretty much lied down and is accepting its fate. Minnesota is, but watch Michigan in 2017. I think some interesting things could happen there. The folks up there have not taken a docile position on this. They're getting more and more fired up, and I think they've had a boost of confidence with the election of Donald Trump. And I don't think the story is finished yet in Michigan, even though we've had, you know, stories in the last year of one whole city in Michigan, Hamtramck, now having the first Muslim-majority city council. We've seen what's happened in Dearborn, where you drive through there and you don't even know that you wouldn't recognize it as being an American city. And the Polish have been run out of Hamtramck. A lot of businesses have been run out of Dearborn and replaced with Islamic businesses. So this is where the metal meets the road, and I think 2017 is going to be a very interesting year.
From your research, Mr. Holman, the violence in Europe seems to be much more widespread and frequent than anything here in America. From what you know, is there anything that has to do with the citizens of the United States and the availability of guns and the lack thereof in Europe, or is there something else going on?
Well, number one, I kind of agree with your summary there, but I kind of disagree with it. They've had some bigger attacks lately in Europe. You know, when you look at Paris and Brussels, and the Nice attack was horrific, where the man drove the truck through the crowd of people celebrating Bastille Day. But we've had quite a few attacks on Mr. Obama's watch here in the United States, especially in the last couple of years. You know, I recently wrote a story published in WND about 2 weeks ago that was titled Eight Bloody Terror Attacks in 18 Months Here on U.S. Soil. And if you look at the list, I mean, it starts with Chattanooga, five unarmed U.S. servicemen shot dead by Mr. Mohammed Abdul Aziz, whose family came from Kuwait. You had that was in July 2015. Then in, you know, November 2015, you had a knife attack at UC Merced, where Mr. Faisal Mohammed, an 18-year-old student there, who came from Pakistan with his family, he wounded four students and teachers before he was shot dead by a security guard. You know, then you had November, December 2015 with San Bernardino, 14 people killed at an office Christmas party there by Mr. Farouk, along with his fiance Tashfeen Malik, who he was able to get in from Saudi Arabia on a rubber stamped visa, even though she took her passport photo in a full burqa, no red flags there, just rubber stamp it and let her in. Then you had on February 2016, you had another knife attack at the Nazareth Mediterranean restaurant in Columbus, Ohio, by Mr. Mohamed Barry. He was a refugee from the African country of Guinea. He wounded four people, one critically. Then on September 17th, we're getting more recent now, September 17th, we had the St. Cloud stabbing spree at the Crossroads Mall in St. Cloud, Somali refugee, thank you very much, 10 people wounded. That same day, you had the Chelsea pipe bombing by an Afghan refugee that injured 29 people. You know, that was also on September 17th. Then on November 28th, you had the Ohio State University knife attack, where the young gentleman there, Abdul Ali Razan Artan, took a lesson from the gentleman in Nice and tried to ram his car through a gathering of students, and when that didn't work, he got out and started stabbing them. And what do all these attacks have in common? Every single one was committed by a Muslim migrant or the son of a Muslim migrant. And then we had an attack just 2 weeks ago by a native-born Muslim convert, Esteban Santiago, which, did you hear the news just out today?
Which
on
is?
That one, 2 weeks
control?
After the attack, which I predicted, when this attack took place on, I think it was January the 10th or 11th, it was presented in our media as just a U.S. military veteran who had suffered PTSD, some mental, emotional problems, and he just went off and, you know, went on a shooting spree at the Fort Lauderdale airport and killed five people, injured six others. And I predicted at the time, it will come out a couple of weeks later what the real story is, and nobody will notice. It will be off the radar. We've all forgotten about it, and that's exactly what happened. Just today, just this afternoon, the Orlando Sentinel reported that Mr. Esteban Santiago, who is a Muslim convert, admitted to law enforcement that he did that shooting for ISIS. So there you have it. We have quite a few, a lot of blood being spilled here in America, and I think a lot of it, with the exception of that last case, Mr. Santiago, who was born of Puerto Rican parents, and we can't say that he was brought here from any Muslim country, but every one of these other attacks, we can.
Yeah, and there's the last incident you mentioned with the Fort Lauderdale shooting. They absolutely took advantage of him being a veteran and used that as the, you know, headline of the story. Former Iraq War veteran, PTSD, goes on a rampage
Mr. Holman called it. I mean, he called it though.
And there's more information that's come out. Like, he turned himself into the FBI offices in Alaska with the same firearm he used in the shooting. He's claiming that he's being mind controlled by the government. And just the fact that he went to an FBI office and tried to explain to these people what was going on with them, and they let him leave with his weapon and all this, it stinks to me. But he did come out and claim that ISIS, he was a part of ISIS, and he did it for ISIS, which That's is
right. Yeah, and it's almost,
you know, it
like the whole rest of the story, if you read the story out today, it's almost like the original story was all just BS and refuted, you know. So we saw the same thing with the Orlando shooting. Oh, and by the way, I think I may have left that one off my list. 49 people killed at the gay nightclub in Orlando. And he was the son of an Afghan immigrant.
I gotta stop you right there, Mr. Holman. I'm sorry about this. Yeah. We're at the bottom of the hour break here. Our guest is Leo Holman, a man that I've got a lot of respect for, great author. WorldNet Daily, go to WND, check him out, and of course his book coming out, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement, Jihad. And Believe me, it is jihad.
Leo Holman. Also his latest article, Obama and Kerry have one last surprise for the Jewish yep. state, which is something we want to talk about before we are done with this interview. We'll be back with Leo Holman on the other side for the next segment, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our guest is Leo Holman. He's a news editor for WND.com. He's been a reporter editor at several suburban newspapers in Atlanta and Charlotte, North Carolina, in those areas. He's also served as a managing editor of Triangle Business Journal in Raleigh, North Carolina. His latest book, and you've got to grab this, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad, coming out here just a week from today, we're lucky to have him. That's Leo Holman on with us on video. You can see him, dapper as ever, of course. Perhaps he might be a customer of Indochino. Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Yeah, we're talking with Leo Holman, WorldNet Daily news editor as well as author. And folks, go to HagmanReport.com if you want. There is a story up there titled the same as Mr. Holman's book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest. Before the break, we were talking about the last terror attack on your list. You were mentioning the Orlando Omar Mateen, the Pulse nightclub attack.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, if you recall that attack, which was a huge one, 49 people, I think it was
the largest in
mass shooting, right, in modern times in America. That one was presented in the media as a young man who had some gay issues and, you know, may have been gay and, you know, had frequented this nightclub before, and perhaps he was, you know, carrying out some sort of revenge attack. Also, some indications that he suffered maybe with some mental illness. That's a favorite excuse. But nothing initially about a jihad attack. And then they came out weeks later and, you know, found out that he had pledged himself to ISIS. You know, it was the same thing with the, Chattanooga shooter. I think they waited 7 months before they came out and gave us the truth on that one. You know, so we see this same pattern every time. It's workplace violence. It's mental illness. It's, you know, it's a PTSD. It's anything but jihad. And so that's the frustrating thing about the U.S. media. I mean, these people call themselves journalists, but they're not asking questions, and if they get answers, they're not reporting them.
Mr. Holman, if I can interject a question here, why? Why open the doors specifically to Muslim immigrants who will not in any way, shape, or form, or are not compatible with our representative republic or with our set of laws, who put Sharia over our Constitution? Why is this happening to America and as well as Western Europe and Europe in general? Why?
Well, that is the $6 million question. Why? Why would our elite, global elites who have ruled for decades, you know, Western Europe, the United States, why would they do this? But if you look into the text of the UN documents and you start to see some things emerge. The 2030 agenda, you've probably done some shows on that. I know you have. I've watched your show, and I have great respect for it. And by the way, I'm honored to be on here today. This is I'm just thrilled to be on with you guys. And but you look in these texts, and the 2030 agenda and the new urban agenda, which the new urban agenda is the implementation policy for the 2030 agenda. And in that 2030 agenda, for the first time, we see the UN coming out and declaring rights of third world migrants to what? To resettle in Western democracies. And we're not even talking traditional refugees, because the traditional 1951 Geneva definition of a refugee was somebody who's fleeing a, quote, well-founded fear of persecution for either usually their religious or political beliefs, for their beliefs. But in the 2030 agenda, it talks all about the rights of migrants to have all these different things, you know, economic opportunity, the right to fair housing, the right to affordable transportation. You know, you look in these documents, the 2030 agenda and the new urban agenda, and you see these things and you start asking yourself, why do migrants in the third world have the right to our country's fruits and freedoms under our Constitution? Foreigners don't have rights under the U.S. Constitution, but that is what's being sneaked in here, you know. And I think the bottom line answer to your question is, it's probably multifaceted, but and not just one answer, but one of the primary things I think that these globalists are trying to accomplish is a massive redistribution of wealth. And how do you do that? You bring the third world labor into the West, and you ship our good-paying manufacturing jobs into the third world. And it's basically a war on the middle class here in the West, especially in America, but also Western Europe. And I think people are starting to open their eyes to it, and they're starting to see that, see through the lies, because, you know, George Soros and these global elites, they're always harping on income inequality, you know, and but my goodness, they've been the ones in power for the last two, three, four, you know, decades. Donald Trump is the first, you know, populist, non-globalist president we've had since, you could argue, Ronald Reagan. And what is, it's all happened on their watch. All of this outsourcing of jobs and all of this in-migration of cheap labor, it's all on their watch. And that's the reason why the extreme income inequality has been just, you know, gathering steam and momentum until I think it's reaching a tipping point now, and people are saying, enough. You know, that's why you had blue-collar Democrats in places like Michigan and Ohio voting for a Republican. That it's the first time that's happened since Ronald Reagan.
Interesting.
Yeah, and back to something you mentioned earlier, about what these refugees are being given. A lot of times, and I've seen this in Germany a lot and in Europe, they're being given houses that belong to people who were born in Germany. They're being given benefits as they're being taken away from other Germans. And a lot of people are starting to recognize what's going on, and no amount of lying or propaganda is going to turn this around, I don't think. I think but you're right, from the free trade agreements to the destabilization of the U.S. economy, this is all a systematic attempt by globalists to try to cripple our economic situation, not only here in America, but in the Western world. And we see this rise in Asia and in the Chinese economy and trade. They're becoming a world power. And just today, the Chinese president was advocating globalism when there's this huge rise in nationalism and populism, as you said. Merkel.
They're certainly running scared, yeah.
Merkel's future in Germany. There's an election coming up. Germany has been ripped in half by the immigration and refugee issue. Does she have a political future in Germany, or is this the end of the line for her?
Well, you know, she's definitely running scared. We've seen her take drastic action lately, you know, banning the burqa. Who would have thought anyone would see that day in Germany? You know, but there's a lot of strength on the other side. The same thing we see in the U.S. with the media completely on the side of the globalists in that country. And, you know, you've also got that issue in Germany, which you don't have in France and some of the others. I really think we might see something in France before Germany, but I could be wrong. And the only reason is the German psyche. I'm from German descent myself. My grandparents migrated to America in the 1920s. You know, and the German psyche was really damaged, as you know, by World War II and the guilt complex that was heaped upon them. You know, all Germans were seen as bad, you know, in the wake of all of that. And we had years and years of Hollywood putting out movies where, you know, the evil Gestapo Germans, you know, when a lot of the Germans, you know, were people, you know, they're people just like us. People can be fooled by their leaders. And I think, you know, in desperate times, people are more easily fooled by their leaders. And you had desperate times economically in Germany. And I just would, if I could speak to the German people, I would say, you know, that's in your past. You are not racist. You are not bigots. But you do have the right to preserve your country and your culture. And so, you know, I do think it's going to be closer than a lot of people realize, but have I counted Merkel out? No, I wouldn't do that yet.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, because I have. I just can't see it with the way things have been going lately. And then the people are starting to really catch on, and it seems mm-hmm. to be... not just people who are in the, I mean, it's the talk of towns, reading different internet sites and message boards and comment sections. People are really fed up with the way things have been going, and they
and do you know that they've
the
even they've criminalized in Germany, they've criminalized criticism of Islam. If you post mm-hmm. something too critical of Islam on Facebook, you can actually be arrested.
So, yeah, the we've had a few journalists on from the UK and other places across the globe, and the hate speech laws that have been enacted in different parts of Europe. It's just insanity to think people live under those kind of restrictions.
You know, so you may be right that, you know, maybe even Germany has reached the tipping point. I hope you are right.
Yeah, it's pretty painful to watch this continue.
Yeah.
If I can just interject this one thing here, because I like in your how you cite the use of private agencies, specifically churches or agencies with church-like names that are tied to various denominations to do the resettlement work here, especially here in the United States, and. You know, without public hearings and without notices in the newspaper and whatever.
Right.
And folks, we're talking with Leo Homan, his book, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. I guess my question to you with respect to that is, how deeply are these NGOs, or how deeply are these, or well, let me back up. What's in it for those groups, I guess, whether it be, you know, what's in it for them to be involved in this?
Yeah, great question, Doug. Basically, a lot of money. They are paid. Most people don't realize this because they present themselves as charitable organizations, and they have churchy-sounding names, as you said. You know, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, Episcopal Immigration and Migration Services. You know, the Jewish Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is involved. So, you know, we even have evangelical groups involved in a group called World Relief. You know, that is a offshoot of the National Association of Evangelicals. So the Baptists are involved. None of them have their hands clean on this. And so every one of your listeners who goes to any type of church might have, you know, an issue with their church that they might want to take up. Why are we sending money to these groups? You know, they present themselves as charities, but the truth is that 65% to 97% of their budgets, I've researched the budgets of these groups, and, you know, upwards of 70%, 80%, 90% of their budgets are funded by federal grants and fees. And they are paid by the head over $2,000 for every refugee they resettle in an American city. They're able to keep roughly half of that amount after they give the rest to the refugee. They also make, there's loans to the refugees for airfare. And once they collect the loan from the poor refugee, they're able to keep a percentage of it from the federal government. They can apply for all these different federal grants for services to the refugees, everything from, you know, family and marriage counseling to how to shop at an American grocery store, how to drive, how to do this, that, and the other. They say they're doing all this for them, but they're what? They're paid by the government to do it. So it's not, they're being fraudulent. They're not being truthful. It's not what you and I would consider charity work.
Man, it's a human commodity, right? That's what it is.
It's a form of human trafficking. I've heard it described that way, exactly. And it is the refugees sometimes who are the victims. You know, we've had stories of refugees, you know, well, even this one who was arrested in Aberdeen. Why was he in the city one day? One day in a strange city and a strange culture and allowed to wander by himself down the street until he preyed upon a woman. And by the way, he said that what he did was not wrong in his country. So, you know, these people are themselves, you know, being taken advantage of. Why? In this case, it was for cheap labor. And by the way, that's the other side of the coin. You have the NGOs involved raking in scads of government money, and that's why, you know, you tend to see a lot of idealistic people and democratic type people working on that end of this program. But then you have the meatpacking plants, the yogurt plant, the huge world's largest yogurt plant in Twin Falls, Idaho, and all these other industries employing the refugees as what? Cheap labor, replacing Americans at a cheaper cost. And that's where we see the Republican support for the program. This program has flown under the radar. This is not a new thing. This program has flown under the radar for more than 35 years with absolutely no dissent from the Democrats or the Republicans until this last year and a half, when Donald Trump started making an issue of it.
You know, a lot of people ask, I've heard people talk about this, if Trump didn't make immigration the main form of his campaign, would he have gotten elected? And on to Trump, I want to ask you your opinion. Do you think what Trump says is talk to appease people and make them happy, or do you think he's going to follow through with these, you know, being more, the trade agreements, one, the refugees, two, and, you know, ending this non-assimilation and vetting the people who are coming in? Do you think that will happen?
I do expect him, well, you know, he kind of backed off of what he originally said, you know, with halting all Muslim immigration until we can, what, quote, figure out what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, a very good instinct of his. He caught a lot of flack in the media from that, and he has since softened that to extreme vetting, as he calls it. You know, I do think we'll see some form of extreme vetting, or at least better vetting, but I hate to say it, Joe and Doug, extreme vetting would not have stopped a single one of those terrorist attacks on that list that we ran through earlier in the show. Why? Because every single one of those was either a second generation born here in the States to a Muslim immigrant, or he was a young child or teenager when he came here. Of course, every single one of them would have passed through vetting. So,
good point. Yeah.
You know, how do you vet against future devotion to extreme Islam? It's, you know, and if you listen to the neighbors of these people, the Chattanooga guy and the Orlando guy and the OSU attacker, without exception, when they interview the neighbors of these fellows, we always hear, or the former school teachers, he was the nicest guy. He was so gentlemanly. People loved him. He was quiet. He was popular. Well, I don't suspect they're lying, do you? I believe that they're telling the truth. That's how these men came across, and they probably were. The Chattanooga guy, the shooter, he came here when he was 6 years old. Muhammad Abdulaziz. He went to American schools. He was on the high school wrestling team. Everybody loved him. He went on to college at University of Tennessee at Chattanooga and got him a degree in electrical engineering. It was only after college that he started getting interested in his roots, his Islamic roots. He started studying the Quran in depth. He grew out his beard. He started attending mosque regularly. And then he kills five unarmed U.S. servicemen at a recruitment center. It's tragic. And sometimes it only takes, we're told, you know, this radicalization process. It can take as little as weeks or months from Mr. Nice Guy to dangerous killer. All that was needed was for him to study the Quran, the Hadith, and perhaps get some encouragement somewhere along the line.
You know, it's interesting. Back when Obama took office, the DHS and other government agencies released a number of lexicons and domestic extremist examples. And one thing that they really focused on was online radicalization for lone wolf terrorists. Only they used constitutionalists, Second Amendment people, preppers. And you saw that Islam was, you know, like a footnote in a lot of these reports.
Yeah.
But it seems like, looking back now, that all that is geared towards what you just described is the radicalization of people brought here or born here back to their cultures of origin. And it is disturbing when you give the examples and you're talking about people who have, you know, roots here, who were pretty much raised here.
This kid in Chattanooga, he was, by all appearances, he was the poster child for a well-assimilated, successful American Muslim. And so if we can't count on those, the ones who live in good neighborhoods, he didn't live in a ghetto, you know, he lived in a good neighborhood. Same with, there was a young girl in Birmingham, Alabama, same thing, I believe I mentioned her in my book. You know, from a wealthy Muslim family, appearing to be well assimilated, popular in high school, she got more devout. She started wearing the hijab. She started going to mosque, and before you know it, she's leaving for Syria to become an ISIS bride.
Nice.
So, yeah, it can happen quickly.
Well, you mentioned mosques. All these mosques, they're being built with Saudi money, right?
75 to 80%. Yes, you're absolutely right, Doug. 75 to 80% of American mosques are funded at least in some partial way by Saudi money. And what do we know about that? You know, that is Wahhabism, Salafi Islam. That is the most virulent brand of Islam, and that's what we're raising up here in the United States. They're not going to tell their people to go out and commit wild jihad ad hoc. That's not what the stage that they're at right now. They want them to be peaceful. I believe most of these who went off and committed terrorist attacks, like you say, are what we'd call lone wolves. They haven't been well-planned terrorist cells, and that's the difference between what Joe was saying earlier and what we saw in Paris and Brussels in Europe. But that is coming. If we continue on this path of what I call weaponized immigration, this is not the immigrant of your grandfather or my grandfather who came here with the intention of assimilating, learning the language, fitting in, adopting American values. This is weaponized immigration. And it's going to come back to haunt us.
Pure conquest, as you point out in your book. And folks, again, Leo Homan, author of Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. Pure conquest, in my view. Go ahead, Joe.
And the editor for WorldNet Daily. We only have 2.5 minutes left, Mr. Homan. Your latest article, Obama, Kerry have one last surprise for Jewish state. Can you give us a little sneak peek into what that's about?
Well, that actually was written to sort of send out a warning about what could have happened this past weekend in Paris with the Paris Peace Summit. It ended up not coming together as some people had feared, thank God. But as you know, he's already had one major surprise for Israel, and he's not through. We have 3 more days, so let's keep our eyes peeled. But I think hopefully we're out of the woods with any more negative Israel resolutions coming out of the UN under this administration.
Mr. Homan, what's the best place for people to get your book right now? Pre-order, any pre-ordering How do we get our hands on it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's available pretty much everywhere now. Amazon has it. It's been running number one already in the category of nationalism. Interesting category they put it under, but it is selling well on Amazon. But it is also available in the WND.com superstore. That address is superstore.wnd.com, and you can find it on there as well.
Okay, fantastic. And be sure, folks, this is a very, in my view, a very valuable resource written by Mr. Homan. He's a great researcher, investigative author. His columns, we follow him, his research and investigative work product. We want to thank you so much for being part of our program. And
absolutely,
we do hope you'll come back. Man, it's an honor to have you. Yeah, it's
same
this is
here.
Great.
Like I said, I have followed you guys for quite some time. You are one of my favorite shows, and you have such interesting guests. I'm honored to be, you know, considered among them. I really am.
We're honored to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well
again,
God bless you, brother.
Folks,
same to you. And there's so much more, yeah, that we could talk about in a future show.
Absolutely. Right. I think we're only scratching the surface on the weaponized immigration, as you call it. And there's a lot more happening and going to continue to happen as we transition through this populist, nationalist, anti-globalist sentiment that seems to be racking up all over the world.
Absolutely.
Leo Homan, God bless you. Thank you, my friend. And we'll be talking soon again.
Thank you, and God bless you both.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too.
Folks, that was Leo Homan. What a great guy, and what a fantastic book. And I'm serious about this: Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. Follow him at WND.com, and certainly grab a hold of that book. I know I am, that's for sure. And Joe,
yeah, I really want to read that book because we get a lot of the fluff from the media, both from Europe and here the U.S., you know, sugarcoating a lot of what's happening. And very rarely do you get a good piece of investigative journalism in an article or a book about what's really happening with immigration in the Western world. And this weaponized immigration is definitely a serious issue, as over 15,000 Syrian refugees alone came to the U.S. last year, and Obama was pushing for upwards of 110,000 this year. Don't know that that's going to happen. But when we come back, Stan Dale from StanDale.com will be joining us, and he'll be with us till the end of the show. Stay with us.